Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was young.
Hello and welcome to Real Recovery. So glad you're joining us tonight. We wouldn't do this show without you. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, and across the way, George P. Fraser, a man who grew up on frozen concentrated orange juice. George, how are you?
And a lot of sugar, Bill.
I know that part. I know that part, but it is going to be a great show tonight. Dr. Tim Walsh is joining us, back by popular demand, and it was my demand that brought him here.
Well, I can't disagree with that. He's my favorite guest,
okay.
Besides me. You know, when I did it, I mean, it's not even close, but he's a distant second, but he is second. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's great to have him. I always learn something.
I do too. I always learn a lot. And I love our testimonies of people who have gone through addiction and have come out the other side through the power of Jesus. I love those stories, but I also love to get some education and training and get a scientific perspective from Dr. Walsh. So that'll be a great, great hour.
Yeah, one of the things that I hope we do on this show is bring new insights into people. I think the reason we stay sober and keep walking with God is we keep adding to it. And I think for a lot of us, there wasn't a big gap. It was missing pieces. And Paul talks about pressing on towards the goal. It's adding things in your repertoire, maybe working out, maybe getting up an hour earlier to spend time with the Lord. If you're not doing that, I know that's been a bill.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think we're going to chat a little bit about step 10 tonight, George, before we bring on Tim.
I just killed the show early this time.
Well,
big gap there.
Yeah. That's okay. I mean, at one point you kill it, but yeah, I have to admit it was early in this show.
I got it out of the way early today.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll give you another opportunity here for redemption. Let's talk about step 10. You're the expert on the steps.
Well, step 10 is we continue to take our personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. One of our earlier guests, Dr. Glenn Pickering, told us that being wrong doesn't mean you're bad. And a lot. One of the things I've learned in my walk in recovery is I'm wrong a lot. And instead of defending it, rationalizing it, minimizing it, and justifying it, I can go, I messed up. I want to repent, Bill, in my walk, and go, Jesus, please forgive me. We go to John 1:9, I believe it is. He's faithful to forgive us if we confess. And it frees you up to not have to be perfect and defend yourself. But it's acknowledging, what can I do better? And if I want to keep my walk moving towards Christ and my recovery interesting, I need to add to it. And a lot of it is, how are you feeling? How are you thinking? And that's where I wanted to go today. And Dr. Walsh, do you have any thoughts on this?
Let me bring him on. Dr. Tim Walsh is Senior Vice President at Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge. Always glad to have him on. Tim, welcome.
Thank you. I feel welcome.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, good question. So you know, what I'd title this, George, is making our feelings, making our emotions, and that's where the empowerment comes in, is can we make our emotions? Clearly, when we go through, you know, when we have treatment or recovery, we talk about emotions all the time. The Bible talks about emotions all the time. You know, they're the zest of life, the spice of life. There are the energy of life. So emotions, it's clearly deeply a part of being human. So I don't think I have to convince any of our listeners. Hear me say our listeners again, Bill. Where does that even come from?
I
don't know.
Quite appropriate.
Yeah, thank you. Well, your listeners, that emotions are important. So interesting. I looked up, you know, even the word emotion, and it means to move out of. And I've always thought of emotions that way, that emotions are like the energy that we have and the direction or the signal that we need to go someplace else. And what we're hearing, listening, reading in neuroscience these days is that the brain is actually designed they would say evolved, but I'm going to say designed, to predict the future all the time. And either your predictions about the future are real and true and factual, or they're not. And that's where emotions can either get us in trouble or emotions can actually lead to helping us to survive, to maintain our lives, and then also to thrive. So emotions are key to all of that. But if you think about that that way, I think that all by itself is really key to recovery, which is, what if I just looked at my emotions and thought about my emotions and even had feelings about my emotions? That's an interesting way to look at it, as a signal, as a message, as a almost like a directional light. And yet I was able to take a look at that and say, well, is that signal correct? Is that message correct? Is it sending me the right message? Are my emotions communicating the right meaning to me about any given situation or any relationship or what's even going on in my own body? So emotions are absolutely critical, not just to recovery, of course, but to life. But I just want to throw that out there, that what if we took the what is cutting-edge neuroscience and we accepted the fact that emotions are signals, they're messages, and they're the way we make meaning out of how we interact with other people and the world? What if we did that? What would the impact be on our mental health and our physical health as a result?
Well, George and I don't know, so you better.
Well, I want to jump back to this Our Show stuff. I know Arnold was going to get rid of me one day, but we're always glad to have you on because you are an important part of our recovery team. Mm-hmm. Tim, I always think with my guys that all you do when you use a mood-altering chemical basically is change how you feel. And there's some physiology there, but there's also emotional and changing your emotional state. So if you get too sad, too depressed, too lonely, could I use again? Absolutely, I could. And the way to get out of that, to me, is to do something to change how I feel without a chemical. Does that tie into this?
It does. Now, you mean, like an artificial chemical, like drug and alcohol. That does. And that actually ties right into what we've been talking about the last several times, which is, there are certain habits I call them dope habits last time, that jack up your dopamine. They spike and they layer your dopamine in your body. And it's all pleasure oriented, and it's instant, and it's focused in on gratification, and it's totally self-focused. And what happens as a result? We then have what's called down regulation. Your emotions crash, your energy crashes. You actually get decompressed and you actually get depressed. That is what we've been talking about, is the source oftentimes of people's anxiety, their depression, their despair, their lack of pleasure in life. The chemical reality of feelings is exactly and right on. And I do believe that God has designed these chemicals in our body to move us towards the things that are good, to move us towards the things that are true, to move us towards the things that are right. And I believe that is why the chemicals, the molecules, actually even lower than that, that's why they exist. And so when we don't like the way we're feeling, our state of emotions, especially negative emotions, I put that in quotes, George and Bill, what we experience as negative emotions, we then try to alter our mood. We try to alter our emotions through these kind of artificial means. And what you're saying, George, which is exactly right on, is there's other ways to alter those molecules, to alter those chemicals through other behaviors. And we've called those spiritual habits, spiritual disciplines in the past. And all of those spiritual habits, those spiritual disciplines, a way of life, the spiritual program that we follow in AA and NA, do in fact alter our feelings. They alter our moods.
One of the ways, Tim, this ties into step 10 for me is when I get anxious, stressed, sad, I look and take a personal inventory. Did I have a quiet time today? Mm-hmm. Did I spend time with God? Did I get enough sleep? Did I get my workout in? Am I eating right? because I think the way to relapse, if it's a process by which I return to chemical use, my warning signs can, you know, indicate to me, I'm not feeling this. This isn't,
very good.
Did I neglect something or do I need to add something?
That's really good. And in fact, I'd like to do a quick exercise with you and Bill, if you don't mind. You don't have to, but I would also encourage your listeners to also go through this exercise. When we start talking about emotions, what oftentimes is we emotionally shut down because we're quite aware that we're not aware of our emotions oftentimes. And we also feel like it's really complicated, and so sometimes we start shutting down. And in fact, I just looked at this app, this new app called the Universe of Emotions, and it says we have 34,000 emotions. It's a really cool app. It sends you through this universe and constellation. So 34,000, goodness, you know, I mean, that's quite the emotional vocabulary right there, isn't it? Well, that's why when we start approaching emotions, it kind of freaks us out, because when we say certain emotions, we go, what do we even mean by that? But here's what I want to do. I want to prove to the three of us right now and the people that are listening that we actually do have a good sense of these more primal feelings, of these body sensations that make up our emotions. So you guys game?
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. So right now, as you kind of scan your body, as you scan your brain, your body, do you feel pleasant or unpleasant?
Pleasant.
Pleasant.
Good. Is your mood up or down or just normal, kind of regular?
Up.
Up.
Good. Do you feel high energy or low energy?
High.
High.
Are you feeling satisfied or unsatisfied?
I'm satisfied.
I'm hungry.
Good.
I missed lunch, so I'm
hungry.
I'm not super satisfied right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. See, you're aware of that. That's great. Are you feeling comfortable or uncomfortable?
Comfortable.
Comfortable.
Do you feel tense or relaxed?
Neither. I'm just comfortable.
Comfortable. Okay.
Sorry. Relaxed.
I feel relaxed as well.
Good. Do you feel rested or tired?
Rested.
Do you feel well or ill?
Well.
Do you feel, this is a tough one, but just answer from the gut, if you will. Do you feel regulated or unregulated?
Regulated.
Yeah, regulated.
Yeah, which goes with feeling in control or out of control. So I'll skip that one. But do you feel pain or pleasure right now?
Pleasure.
Pleasure.
Do you feel alert and vigilant? Or do you feel, sorry, we'll just leave it at that. Do you feel alert and vigilant? Yeah.
Can I answer for George?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I'm feeling annoyed at Arnold.
Yeah, I'm feeling the same way. I'm feeling annoyed too, Tim. Yeah.
Sorry. Do you feel, that's good. Do you feel mindful or in the present, or do you feel distracted?
Mindful.
Distracted.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel connected, like with the three of us? Do you feel connected or disconnected?
Connected.
Connected, yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel open or closed to new experience right now?
Open.
Open.
Do you feel threatened or safe?
Safe.
Around Bill, it goes both ways. I feel safe.
Good. And this is more of a spiritual feeling. Do you feel like you're in right relationship with God and others, or not in right relationship with God and others right now?
Right.
And do you feel free and uninhibited, or do you feel inhibited right now?
Free.
I feel free with a little inhibition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's what I want to point out. Do you notice how easy that was?
That was very easy.
To consult your body and your brain and to get an awareness of your sensations. They call that somatosensory, but just think about how easy that is. And even the experience right now, and I'm guessing even going through this, you know, monitoring ourselves and being aware of our bodies and ourselves actually probably calmed us down a bit. It did make us feel more connected. When we talk about emotions, though, just think about how convoluted we get, how contorted we get, how much it starts almost like agitating us when we start talking about certain emotions. But when I talked about how your body's doing and how you're feeling and what's going on in your body, which are primal feelings, right, you were able to answer every single one of these, almost every single one of these, in an instant. And here's what I want to tie into both recovery and to health is, think about that. Think about that, or even just feel that right now, is we are, if we just stay in tune a bit, we are aware of our body and brain. We are aware of how we're doing, if somebody asked us how we're doing. And those are the building blocks of all emotions. And if we can be aware even of these very basics, you know, like the one thing you said, I'm not satisfied, you know, it can get to annoyance or irritation if we apply a meaning to it. You know, so if we started rubbing against each other wrong in this interview, it wouldn't just be stressed or being alert. We would start assigning a meaning to that person is causing my annoyance or my agitation, right? And so that's when it becomes an emotion. We assign a meaning to it, and we start predicting if this continues, this is going to frustrate me. And therefore, I start getting annoyed or agitated. So that's an emotion. When we make a meaning out of what's going on with our bodies and these basic feelings that we have. And I just want to tie back into what George was saying about a daily inventory. You can actually do a moment-by-moment inventory of how am I doing? And you don't have to assign a meaning or an emotion to it. You just say, how am I doing? And you go through some of these basic feelings that go on your body and your brain. And that's what happens. And then by doing that, you also get clear indications about, okay, great, what should I do about that? Pretty easy, right?
Yeah, it is pretty easy. All right, we'll take a little break. Dr. Tim Walsh is our guest. We're talking about emotions today, how it ties into recovery. We'll be right back.
Try to see things my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? Why you see it your way? On the risk of knowing that my love may soon be gone.
Welcome back to the show. Dr. Tim Walsh is with George and I tonight. Ryan's on the board, so we're all here as a team talking about emotions and how they affect our recovery. We just went through that very interesting exercise, Tim, and it was quite interesting. I was thinking if we had responded negatively to most of the things you had suggested, would we be a hot mess right now?
Yes, and that's actually, well, to tie that in real quick, so that's when we start assigning negative emotional states to that. We feel depressed, we feel sad, we feel panic, we feel fear, we feel regret, we feel resentment, so that's when we start making a meaning out of what really is your bodily feelings and your sensations and then what's going on within your body, and we start assigning a meaning to that, and then that starts being experienced then as in a negative emotional state, and we'd be a hot mess, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, let's talk about some facts and some myths. Always helpful.
Yeah. So just first of all, the myth. This one actually comes from my 3-year-old grandbaby, Phoebe.
Okay.
And so apparently we were correcting her at one point, and she would, she's upped her game, by the way. So I've had to up my game.
All right.
You know, but she says to me, again, she's three, and she turns to me and my wife, Krista, and she says, "You're making my feelings." Well, okay, there's some myth in there, right? And we often say that in relationships sometimes too, is, you know, we tell people they're making us feel or have certain emotions. Well, the truth in that, of course, is, you know, we bring energy in another person's directions. We behave in a certain way, and that does affect another person. So that's truth. But the myth of that is, with neuroscience, what we're starting to find out is you take all these bodily sensations and feelings that we have, and then our emotions start are the prediction of what's going to happen as a result of that. That's what the emotion is. So our brain is constantly predicting the future, creating a model of the future, and then based on that model is then moving either towards or away from something based on that model of the future. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
so what's powerful about that is more of a concept. It's like a simulation or a model, right? That's what's happening with our brain. We're making a simulation of the future, and then we're acting on that, and we call that an emotion. Well, what did we do? Our brain, our mind, but neuroscientists would say their brain, is making that emotion. So Phoebe's on to something. but I'm not making her emotions. She is, right?
Right.
So anyway, so our emotions can change how we sense the whole world. You know, so we make our emotions. So let's say we tend to be a more fearful person. We tend to be a more sensitive person. We tend to be very sensitive to the environment and the cues in the environment. Let's say we tend to be more reactive to the environment. Well, we tend to then interact with the world in what? A fearful way.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that causes some of us anxiety and panic, mood disorders, because we are experiencing the world in a very fearful way, whether that's real according to what's going on in the world or not. So our predictions about the future, called our emotions, that we actually created, the emotion as a prediction of how things are going to be, may throw us off because they're unrealistic. But if they're realistic, if they're right on, if we really are predicting what is truly something that we should be afraid of in the environment, then they're quite useful, aren't they? But emotions, it either helps us to survive and maintain ourselves and to thrive, or it doesn't. So emotions are either realistic in that sense, or they're not. They're good signals of what's really going on inside of ourselves and outside of ourselves, or they're not. They're good messengers about what things mean and how we should interpret the world and how we should interpret other people or even interpret God, or they're not. And so that's where we have to pause with emotions and say, is that right? Is that really what it means? Is that a good signal? Is that really what's going on here? So I'll give you a good example. So oftentimes when I get angry or frustrated with another person, I will pause and I literally talk to myself with that. And I'll say, Tim, what's going on with you right now? I don't stop and try to make sense out of my anger and going, there's a good reason I'm angry. That's what we do. No, I pause and I ask myself, what's going on with you right now? And I have a conversation with myself, and I even invite the Holy Spirit into that conversation. And what I usually find out, what I would say the Spirit of God reveals to me, is that it's my ego involved, that somehow my ego felt threatened in that situation, and that somehow because my ego felt threatened, therefore I start getting this level of irritation and agitation that I'm calling anger. Well, at that moment then, because I know I made the wrong meaning in that situation, because that person probably doesn't mean that. They probably aren't really threatening my ego. And by the way, why is my ego so sensitive and big to begin with, right? Mm-hmm. And so then I have to spiritually deal with that and humble myself before the Lord, as they would say. So I have to humble myself before the Lord, as they would say. And in that situation, so now what have I done? I have challenged whether what my emotion tells me is the meaning of what's going on, and now I've created a new meaning. Does that make all sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And that's how we make. So, sorry to disagree with my 3-year-old grandbaby, but I don't make other people's feelings, but I do make my own emotions, and that can actually be quite empowering if we look at it that way.
Mm-mm. I like that you're talking to yourself and asking yourself, Tim, what's going on with you? That's very helpful. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, lots more with Dr. Tim Walsh. You're listening to Real Recovery. That's the name of the show. It's been around a while. Hosted by me and George. Bill and George. Ryan's on the board. We got a lot more coming up for you. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the show. So glad to have Dr. Tim Walsh with us tonight on Real Recovery. We're talking about emotions and how it relates to recovery. George, you got a couple questions for Tim.
Well, I was thinking, Tim, and it's really good stuff and interesting. When I first got sober, I'm thinking, I'm never going to have fun the rest of my life. That's my predictor mentally, right?
Mm.
And my emotion was, okay, this is not joy-filled. But what I've learned in my life is my thinking is wrong a lot. In fact, they used to tell me early in recovery, and it still applies sometimes, first thought wrong, that it was more of a reaction than a well-thought-out, okay. And how do we know that our thinking is correct? Because if I'm going to go off my thinking for my emotion, how do I know my emotion is correct, and can I trust that?
Yeah, that's really good. So one of the recommendations, as you know, George, is that, you know, for the first goodness, you know, we do the 90 meetings and 90 day thing. What do we talk about? You don't get into a relationship for a year. And then we even warn people that, you know, those normal feelings that perhaps they might feel later on. Some people have, as you know, what is called post-acute withdrawal syndrome. Well, what does that mean? That means some of us for a month after going through a detox and withdrawal are still experiencing a lot of negative emotions. And some people, according to research, that's up to 2 years, right? So there's some truth to this belief that perhaps I'm not going to feel good again or I'm not going to feel good. And the other thing is that there's some truth to that is you're not supposed to feel as good as you did on methamphetamine. Your brain wasn't designed that. That has blown the whole circuits. What I said to folks with who are taking drugs and alcohol, you essentially, the pharmacy of your brain, you broke into it, you looted it, you took all the drugs, you killed the pharmacist, and you lit the place on fire. That's essentially what you did to the pharmacy in your brain. You are not supposed to feel that good ever. And so in AA and NA, as you know, George, what we trade off is we are going to be reasonably happy in this lifetime. Right on?
Yes. That's part of the serenity prayer, actually, right. The long version.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, and the trade-off is you're not supposed to totally exhaust the limits of your brain and your body the way we have. That's A. And second, you're never going to feel that good again ever because you can't. You can't. You will never experience, as they say, chasing that first high. You're never going to experience that again, and you got to give that up. And so I just want to talk about the reality of that, but can we get to the point where we have a good life and we have positive, steady state emotions, and we can feel joy and serenity and awe and inspiration and love and hope and all these steady state emotions, and do I think that's even better? I do. And that's the truth. The truth is that we do recover. We do restore our brain and our body and our life and our relationships. The path of getting there, well, there's some recovery time, isn't there?
You know, one of the things that I'd add to that from my personal experience, cocaine was unbelievably good at parts of it. But you can never have the peace of God that passes all understanding.
So good.
And that was a new thing to me. And really what it gets down to is a lot of little things during the day, the workout, that, you know, doing the show like this, playing with my dog, Bob, a lot of the little normal things, instead of the big explosion, add to contentment, serenity, and peace with God.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't give that up for the mountaintop experience that I know I'm going down the other side too.
Yeah, that's so beautiful, George. So the idea here is we trade that spike, that layering of those neurochemicals. You trade that for what? You trade it for depth. You trade it for the depth of the feeling. You trade it for the meaning of those new feelings. That's what you're trading off, and so we call that savoring. You're actually able to savor even the smallest things, and you're able to cherish the things that are most important. And that's what we learn in this new way of life. And it's not that instant gratification pleasure, which comes and it goes. It's like eating, you know, it's not even like eating cotton candy or Dairy Queen, you know, where it goes away in 10 minutes and then you're left with a headache. But that's kind of what pleasure only is all about. And if you don't mind me getting a little PG-13 on this, what my clients are telling me is what they did is they combined, for instance, sexual activity with their drug and alcohol use, and that intensified the pleasure of that. But it was joyless. There was no depth. There was no meaning. There was no fulfillment with that. And so they and now it's gotten to the point where they can't even enjoy romance or sex and romance, that does not appeal to them because they essentially, at least for a time, have ruined that for themselves through a pure pleasure experience. And now they don't have joy, they don't have love, they don't have meaning, they don't have connection, they don't have belonging, which is what you're talking about, George, which is the depth of feeling and emotion that can come with living a right life.
You know, I love that savoring. Pastor Matt Chandler of the Village Church in Texas talks about that, in that if you're a Christian and you're eating a steak, you should be able to appreciate that more by thinking about all that God did to create it for you.
Yeah, that's right.
And add to that simple pleasure. And, you know, I say amen to that because I believe that's true.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It gives complete depth, and even the smallest things become joyful again. You get your joy back, you know, with all that. You know, the laughter of a baby, you know, the birth of a child, you know, so you start to experience falling in love again. You actually lost the whole feeling of falling in love or a depth of a friendship and developing a friendship. You know, you lose that. It steals, addiction steals all that away from you, and you lose all that, but now you get it back through this new way of life.
Very true. So it's worth it.
That's what
I'm saying. It's kind of a delayed gratification thing that isn't natural for guys. I would have flunked the Oreo test as a kid.
Our marshmallows, yeah. Yeah.
Our marshmallows, yeah. But I think the gift of God through the Holy Spirit is I was able to take some steps that I didn't think would work, and I got results I can't deny.
That's good. Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, so one of the messages that are out there right now, as the whole field starts turning towards what we'd call the medical model, of course, there's truth to the medical model, but it's not the whole truth, and it's not the only pathway to recovery, is it? But the message is you have a chronic brain disease. All these happy chemicals we're talking about in your brain and in your receptors are depleted, and you're going to be chronically depleted. Well, the truth of that is what we just talked about. There is a time of recovery. There is a time where you're regenerating. There is a time where your body and brain are restoring. All that is true. However, when you start talking to people who are solidly, stably in recovery, they talk like you do, George. Their life is satisfying. It is gratifying. We're doing a study right now with the University of Minnesota. And they're doing actually a quite simple thing. They're doing what's called transcranial stimulation. They're doing a direct current, you know, it's not painful, into one part of the brain. And what they're able to show is just by doing that, it's stimulating that part of the brain, people start to develop that self-control or self-management or self-regulation again compared to other people. Well, isn't that simple? Well, what does that tell you? That tells you there's hope. Your brain does regenerate. Your brain can regenerate. And you can be restored. There is hope. And I know there's hope. I see it all over the place at Minnesota Adult Teen Challenge.
Maybe you could get me the home unit. I could put it in one of my old hockey helmets and plug it in at night.
It's a really cool headband, George. You'd like it. Yeah. You look very stylish in that. You'd be styling, brother.
Yeah. Walk around with a big grin on my face all day. Yeah, yeah. I think. A lot of my clients and guys you work with too, and I know Bill, you know, they say it's a disease and all that. And okay, it is, but you know what came before disease? It caused disease and death. And fentanyl's great, but there's the medical problem is the spiritual and the sin. And I don't think we talk enough about that.
Yeah. So, yeah, and so, of course, it's what we call it is biopsychosocial spiritual. So it's we are a whole being, and so if you just focus on the bio, you're going to miss that. If you just focus on the physical, right? And so, you know, for all the folks in recovery that are listening, you know, you're a whole being. And that means we got to pay attention to our emotional life, the psychological. We got to pay attention to our bodies, which is what we just did with that whole body scan, which I hopefully everyone found fairly easy to tune in and to become aware of your body. And wow, that goes a long way all by itself. And now we bring in the spiritual as well. We are a whole being, body, soul, spirit.
I think one of the gifts that God has allowed the medical people to give us, a lot of our clients can't hear us because their brains are the damage from the use. And the reparation modern pharmaceuticals are life-changing. And then they can hear the message. So I never want to say we don't need it all.
Yeah, I don't say that.
But
either.
I don't want to, you know, stop the problem without getting to the real solution, which is Jesus. And I know you agree with me on that.
I do. We, of course, have a withdrawal management program, George, and we help people get to that point that you're talking about. So, you know, we do believe that there is a biological basis, but we try to treat that biological, but people heal, and they do restore, they do regenerate.
All right, we're going to take a little break. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. Our special guest tonight is Dr. Tim Walsh from Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge. We'll be right back. So glad to have you with us tonight. You're listening to Real Recovery, Bill and George. Our special guest is Dr. Tim Walsh, and we're talking tonight about emotional states and how it affects our recovery, our relapse, and we were talking about myths and facts. Tim, let's get back to that. That was so interesting. I know there's more.
Yeah, so another myth. Myth doesn't mean it's entirely false, by the way. It just means that it's kind of a fiction we have about emotions. And so oftentimes what we tell ourselves is we know how another person feels. Or we can see how they feel, that we start reading their body language or the affect on their face. And we often say things to people like, I understand how you feel. And actually, all the research in this area is saying, no, we can't. We know we can't. And actually, I think that's a very humble stance anyway, is if you approach somebody as a magnificent mystery, you know, and you really try to get, if they say something and you try to say back to them, this is what Dr. Jordan Peterson suggests in relationships. If you then try to say back to them exactly, not just what they said, which is called parroting, but you get to the meaning of what are they really saying to you, and you keep telling them that until they go, no, that's it. That's it. Now I feel understood.
Mm-hmm.
He says that that skill all by itself can greatly heal a relationship. And it's all based on, of course, the myth is, I know what you think. I know what you feel. I've been with you for how many years? You know, you're not a mystery to me. I know you better than you know yourself. Well, none of that's true. You don't. And part of the reason we know that is because we hardly understand what we think and what we feel. We're mostly unconscious beings in that way. And so the science is you can't actually know how people think or feel, and oftentimes they can't explain that to you themselves. And they've built some artificial intelligence facial recognition systems that are supposed to capture how people really feel. Well, they all failed miserably. It's too complex, and people have different expressions on their face, and their body language doesn't mean necessarily what you think it means. So if you approach them with humility and that you're just trying to be fully present to the other person and get to know them and find out what they really think and feel, that's called love. And in a loving relationship, you do start to understand better. Not fully, but just to understand better how the other person thinks, feels, and how they're experiencing things. But then don't assume, I know you well. That's a good way to kill a relationship, is to think you so fully know that other person that you can even tell them all about themselves. Wow, big mistake, mm-hmm. big mistake. And so how does that apply to recovery? Is in a loving relationship, we are going to develop empathy. We are going to develop emotional intelligence. Along with that emotional intelligence come emotional skills, and that's going to deepen our satisfaction in those relationships as a result. So, again, good application of neuroscience. But so the other thing that goes along with that is I know how I really feel. I know my emotions. Again, think about how many times the Bible asks us to search ourselves, but more often it says, search me, O God, right? Search me, O God. Or you have the Apostle Paul who says, I don't even examine myself. It's the Lord that examines me. Well, why is that? It's because Or as it says in the Old Testament, the heart is desperately wicked. Who can know it? Well, that suggests to us that we are even a mystery to ourselves oftentimes, and that it's the Lord who will reveal ourselves to us. Bill and George, I don't know if that's the way you see things, but I think we actually come to understand ourselves in relationship, and until we're in deep, loving relationships, we don't understand ourselves. But I'll put that out there and see if that's what your experience is.
Well, it's probably the greatest crucible for human growth, mm-hmm. is being in those relationships. So, I think it's where you do a lot of learning about yourself and others. Yeah. If you're not too, if you're in a Christian relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. I like the way you qualified that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My best relationship is with my dog and my television set. So I'll just sit this one out. It's not a strong suit. But no, I agree with Bill. I think you really are aware of your defects of character when you get into a relationship.
Yeah.
And it's a great opportunity for growth, which can be very painful and a lot of work.
That's good. And so the truth for recovery and healing, and also for our happiness, is that we can become more emotionally aware. We all practice that. We became aware of our body feelings and what's going on. We can develop a deeper emotional language. It's just think about the words we're using now to express what oftentimes people struggle to express. Well, every person listening can also develop that deep emotional language to express what's going on with us. God does grant us wisdom, and the Spirit of God can reveal us to ourselves. In fact, that's one of the jobs of the Holy Spirit, is to reveal us to ourselves and the truth about who we are, both the good of what God has made and designed and what God purposes for us, but also this part of ourselves called the flesh that we need to die to daily. And when we're in loving relationships, Christian relationships, we can be honest, we can be open, we can be vulnerable, and by doing that, we will come to a greater awareness of ourselves and have greater empathy for other people. So that's how this all sorts out. You start with neuroscience, sure, but then you look at the truth of the Bible and you find out they line up, and then you start applying that to life, and it ends up being really, really powerful. So if you don't mind, I'll move on to another myth and
Let's
some facts
it.
About that.
Yeah.
Great.
Dr. Tim Walsh is our guest, and he's from Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge. Always glad to have him on. Let's get back.
Great, great. So one thing that's been out there for almost forever is we have a lizard brain, and I get it. I get why we say that. We have a mammal brain, we have a primate brain. Well, that's based on a notion of evolution, which actually doesn't explain what goes on in our brain. So the truth of neuroscience is that different parts of our brain all work together for different purposes. That the brain is actually this complex network, and the neurons are actually firing all the time, and they all connect to one another. They fire together and they wire together. They branch together to then form our memories, to form what is then becomes these deep core habits in our brain. So, I mean, where's the lizard, mammal, and primate in that? It seems to me that that's an intelligent design of the brain, and that is the way it functions. And actually, that's actually the way mammal brains and lizard brains work too. But so that's what's really going on in our brain. So, but let's apply this to a truth in recovery. The truth is, Bill and George, can we control most of our conscious thoughts?
I can't. I think they happen, and then I get to choose what I do with them. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it is an automatic reaction, and then take the filter and try to act in a way that I'm going to be okay with and that God is. But I don't know how exactly that works. Can you tell me?
Well, yeah, if we just substituted the word manage there, it sounds like we would be in agreement on that. And that the way you described it is what happens, although one of the myths are that our emotions happen to us. And the whole time what we've been talking about is it's true that your body and your brain are reacting to your environment, both your external environment, what's going on around you, and your internal environment, which is called interoception, if anyone cares. But that is happening. So that's the reactive part that you're describing, George. But our brain is always organizing the meaning of what's going on inside of ourselves and outside of ourselves. So our brain, our mind, is always acting on that, and it's not reactive. And so in a very real sense, we make our emotions. In a very real sense, we make our thoughts. And I think that's what you went on to explain when you talked about the whole process of how you arrive at managing your thoughts. So it's just the next thing. Can we manage most of our emotions? Can we learn to manage most of our emotions?
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're not changing.
Yeah.
But we need God's help to do it and guidance, right?
I believe that. I could do all things through Christ who strengthens me, right? And actually, I just did a study. This is powerful, literally powerful. I did a study on what the Bible says about where power comes from. Wow. I just highly recommend that. Do a study on where power comes from, and it's the power to transform. And what you find out is the power of the Holy Spirit, the power of our testimony, the power of the blood of Christ, the power of the Word of God. I mean, it's just like, you go, wow. Mm. And that's where you get the, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, if we actually pay attention to where the power comes from. So I agree with you on that, George. So, and then of course, we can control most of our words and our behavior. So anyways, the truth is, there is a lot of ability designed within us over time to change our habits. And one of the things that I've been stressing with our clients at Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge is I put up on the board, as you guys have seen before, all of the spiritual practices we can do, and I think I would recommend doing on a daily basis. And I put those things up on the board, you know, like giving and prayer and meditation and praise and worship and reading, you know, the Bible or, you know, whatever your sacred book is. And so I put that up on there, and I just ask them, is there anything on this board that you can't do? And they'll say usually something like you said, George, which is, yeah, well, through with Christ in me or through the Spirit, yeah, I can. Anything. Is there anything you can't do? Because we make recovery seem so complicated. We seem emotions so complicated. We make it seem, and by doing that, we make it unreachable to people. But everything you and I and Bill have ever talked about on this program are things that everybody who's listening can do. Every single thing we're talking about, you can do through Christ who strengthens you. And I just want to put that encouragement out there that the spiritual program we talk about is doable. You can do this. It can be done. In fact, there's just millions of people who do it. And that is just hope for everybody who's listening.
I love that. I also think, Tim, it's critical that you don't need to reinvent the wheel here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And models. And what I try to do is do what the guys that are succeeding at their walk and their recovery do and model that.
Mm-hmm.
And we get that starting with the word, we're transformed by the renewing of our mind. And what that does is you get God to, but don't.
Yeah, George, good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, Tim, we just have a couple of minutes left. I know you got some concluding thoughts on this.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if you have it in front of you, Bill, or not, but that Romans 13:13 verse, you know, and these three things remain. I think this is the way it goes, right? Faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is?
Love.
Mm-hmm. Love, yeah. And so people read 1 Corinthians 13. Actually, it's 1 Corinthians 13.
Yeah,
sorry.
It's not Romans. That's what's confusing.
Yeah, it's
not
Romans. Sorry to throw you out there. 1 Corinthians 13, and it's 13. These three things remain, and the greatest, faith, hope, and love, and the greatest of these is love. And I started meditating on that. And the best way to make yourself unhappy is to be dwelling on the past. But what faith does is it takes your experience of God from the past and it brings it into the present. And then with hope, one of the greatest ways to get fearful and anxious is to dwell in the future. But when you think about God's promises and blessings in the future and apply them to today, that is hope, and to live in this moment here and now in relationship to God and others is called love. And I believe that's why the greatest of these is love.
Fantastic. That wraps up our time. Thank you for listening to Real Recovery. So glad to be with you tonight. Have a great week. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.